This is a really complicated topic. So buckle up, and we're going to do the best that we can to try to distill it to two approaches. And through these approaches, we're not suggesting that these are the only ways to look at this issue, but these are two important, key, fundamental ways to look at this issue, acknowledging that there are many other sources and opinions and perspectives that need to be considered when you address this topic halachically. The topic is grumma, which is loosely translated as causation. This issue of how to define grumma, causation, where does it apply? How does it apply? What is the status of something which is done through grumma has many different applications and implications. So for example, and this is probably not the first one you would have thought of if I would have asked you, where do you find an application of grumma, of causation? So the Gemara says, for example, in Beitza, on Chaf Zayin, that there is a special isur, a restriction on causing a blemish in an animal which is a korban. Gram, causing a blemish in an animal. It's a special, that itself is an iser. To cause, not just to punch it in the nose, but to put it in a situation where you're causing that it should get a mum. That's one area of halacha, where there's a specific restriction against causing. That's one area. Or, the Gemara in Shabbos talks about if a person causes the erasure of the name of Hashem. So the context over there is, let's say, somebody, for some reason, unusually, they took a magic marker, like a Crayola washable marker, and they wrote Yud and Hey and Vav and Hey on their arm, for some reason. Why they did that, I don't know, but they did that. Then they're going to go take a shower. So by taking the shower, they're causing the name of Hashem to be erased. Gram Mechikas Hashem. You can now imagine how there are so many different questions that come up in the context of causation. You know, before the Holocaust, one of the big debates in halacha, one of the very interesting controversial debates in halacha surrounded this type of issue of grama. There were two brothers, great, great gaonim. One was the Chazon Nachum, Rav Nachum Wiedenfeld, and his brother, who authored the Tshuvas Doviv Meisharim, Rav Dov Ber Wiedenfeld. So the Chazon Nachum, he lived in Dombrov. He died. He was harassed by the Germans right at the beginning of the war. I think he died of a heart attack related to this Shaila. And then his brother escaped from Europe and became the well-known Chibina Rav, the Doviv Meisharim, Rav Dov Berish Wiedenfeld. So these two brothers both wrote tshuvas. They were big gedolim in Poland. And they wrote tshuvas, and the Chibina Rav disagreed with his brother about the following Shaila, which became like a huge tumult. If you wanted to know like what rabbis were talking about when they went to the spa, you know, in the summertime to hang out at the pool, what was the poolside chatter was about this Shaila. Lo aleinu, a person in those days, they had some more advanced medicine in the first half of the 20th century, but still, it wasn't exactly what we have today. So they had certain situations where they had patients, and by the 1930s, they knew about disease, and they knew about germs. So they had certain patients, lo aleinu, that according to the medical establishment, I don't know if there's such a possibility of such a thing today, but they had a rule that if a person... this person went for their medical intervention in the hospital, all their possessions were considered to be contaminated and they would have to be destroyed. That was the rule. Because they saw, and if you remember, by the way, even though it's to us it sounds totally crazy, if you remember, not too long ago, before Pesach, we were wiping down our products in the garage with antibacterial wipes because we weren't sure how the disease was COVID, was being spread. So this was a big shiloh. A man has told he has this disease. That's what the doctors identify. He has this disease. He's going to be sent to a hospital. And he's going to be treated in this quarantine unit. That's what they would treat it in the 1930s. And when he's going to be released from the hospital is going to incinerate all of his possessions. Is it mutter for him to take his tefillin to the hospital, to put on the tefillin while he's in the hospital, with the knowledge that the hospital administrator will destroy the tefillin when he leaves? So it's a similar type of, it's a grama, you're causing the indirect destruction of the tefillin when the person's going to be discharged from the hospital. This was a huge, huge debate. So in the Tshuvas of the Dovid Meisharim, of the Tshuvina Rav, he says, my brother, who is very sensitive about tefillin, my brother Paskin this, and I have a disagreement. If I'm not mistaken, the legend is that when the Germans came into Dombrov, the Tshuvina Rav's brother, the Chazon Nachum, so they took away his tefillin, and then when he got them back, apparently the second time when they were confiscated, they threw them on the floor, and he picked them up, came home, and just collapsed and died out of the shock of seeing his tefillin desecrated in front of his own eyes, the Chazon Nachum. So these are all Lamaisa types of questions in other areas of halacha, having nothing to do with Shabbos. Of course, one of the biggest realms of halacha where grama comes up is in the realm of nezikin, of damages, which is this week's parsha. It's Parshas Mishpatim. My ox gores your ox, or my car damages your car. All these different kinds of nezikin. The Gemara has a principle. Grama b'nezikin is pater. If I precipitate the damage that's going to happen, I don't inflict the damage, then I'm not chayav. But then how do you define? What are the parameters? What's called causation and what's called inflicting? The Gemara has a difference between something called grama, which is causation, or garmi, which is a little bit more direct. So there are like different lines along a continuum of how direct is it? And then, of course, the key question for us is grama on Shabbos. No. Maybe the most famous of all the grama questions that ever arose was the issue of Shabbos clocks. The timers. You know, the little pin thing is a tick, tick, tick. Remember those? I think we still use them sometimes in some places. We still have them at home. So this is going to be a big question. So what is the halachic status of these things, of causing something to take place on Shabbos? Of course, you're not allowed to do a malacha on Shabbos, but can I cause a malacha to happen on Shabbos? Can I create a situation where the malacha is going to happen on Shabbos? And how do you define what's called direct and what's called indirect? And this is not so simple. And I'm going to begin with actually the end. I'm just going to give you the spoiler right off the bat so that you just understand how complex this is. There is a huge, monumental, stratospheric machlokas between the Magen Avram and the Evin HaOzer. The Magen Avram, Rav Avram Abelo Gombiner, so he's living in the 17th century, he's on the side of the Shulchan Aruch, he's writing his commentary in Poland, and he writes in Hilchos Shabbos and Siman Reish Nun Beis, he says that if you put wheat kernels into a water mill, you're not chayv on Shabbos for toche. There's no chiyuv chatas. If you have, imagine, like in the Disney movies, right? You have the Little House on the Prairie, right? They have the water flowing in the river, the stream, and they have the contraption that's hooked up, and you pour the thing, and the water causes the mill to turn. The Magen Avram says you're not chayav. If you turn to the back of the Shulchan Aruch, there's a commentary called the Evin HaOzer. It was written by the Av Bezdin, the grandson of the Maharshal, the Av Bezdin of a place called Klimentov, probably a beautiful locale in Poland in those days, in the 18th century. Really, destination location, Klimentov, if you're looking for a getaway. I don't know if they have running water today, but maybe in those days it was nice. He says to the Magen Avram, he says, I think you're totally wrong. He says, if you have a mill where the grinding machine is connected to a wheel, which is connected to a flapper that's being moved by the water, when you put in the kernels, that is the malach of tochein min haTorah. That's grinding on a biblical level. And if you think that's complicated, so now they're clearly arguing on Shabbos, talking on Shabbos, yeah. Before Shabbos is a different question. That's also a very good question. And that, we're not going to deal with that today, but that's a question. The Gemara first has a machlokas between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai about something called Shvisas Kalim. Do your vessels have to rest on Shabbos? So this is Mishnayos in the second parak of Shabbos. And then it's a machlokas Amorim, to what extent we're concerned about your vessels resting on Shabbos. So let's say, I don't know, you're going to put something into the laundry machine on Friday afternoon, and it's going to start on Shabbos.
We only talk about you, your family, your animals. It doesn't say your kelim.
Good. So this is a machlokas, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, and it's a further machlokas Amorim. Is there any reason to be machmir for the other side, for the more machmir side? And even if you're not machmir for that, let's say there's no din of Shvisas Kalim according to Beis Hillel, maybe there's a separate problem of something that is causing a big noise that's disturbing the environment of Shabbos. Separate question. But that's all cases of setting something up before Shabbos.
Dishwasher.
It's an article in the Tchumin about that. Rav Moshe has several tshuvas about Shabbos clocks, where you set the clock before Shabbos and the air conditioning is going to kick on Shabbos. Where you set the lights, the alarm clock, all that stuff that you set before Shabbos, it's going to kick on Shabbos. Rav Moshe actually happens to be very machmir about these issues. I think most poskim do not accept Rav Moshe's view. But Rav Shechter, he quotes that there's a newly found Pirush in Mishnayos of the Rambam, who he thinks should lend some support to Rav Moshe's idea to be more machmir. But anyway, we're going to talk now, we're talking all about when you did the action on Shabbos. So I walk over to the water mill, and I take my sack of grain and I dump it in. So did I violate the malacha of grinding on Shabbos? I operated the water mill. So Magen Avraham says no. And Evan Ozer says yes. Later posts can then even come to try to figure out, well, why did the Magen Avraham say no? Maybe the Magen Avraham was talking about a case where when you put the grain in, it didn't immediately go right in. It was sitting in the thing, and then it shook, and then it fell in. So maybe there isn't such a machlokas between the Magen Avraham and the Evan Ozer. This is what is so complicated. Because the din, this is all daraisa level, but we're going to see that potentially it could even be on a derabbanan. Okay, so let's start at the beginning. There's one basic gemara. The gemara tells us, you see in source number one, the pasuk says, "Ksiv lo sase kol malacha, do not do any malacha. Asiyahu da'asur, doing is prohibited. Grama shari." But causing is permitted. So you're allowed to cause malacha to be done, but you're not allowed to do malacha. And the lashon of the Gemara is shari, permitted. So if you could set up a situation where the malacha is only done through causation, through grama, according to the Gemara, it is actually permitted. That's what it says, shari. Right? However, and this is very good for Sfardim, however, Ashkenazim, not so fast. Why not? Because there is a Mordechai. The Mordechai, right here at source number two, the Mordechai was Rav Mordechai ben Hillel. He's living in the end of the 13th century, and he wrote, he's living in the Rhine Valley. He wrote comments on the Gemara. He's living in the Ashkenaz world where the Bali Hatosas have tremendous influence, and these Chachmei Ashkenaz, the Hasidi Ashkenaz, these Ashkenaz Rishonim are teaching and paskening shilas, and the Mordechai writes them down in little pieces of paper. Unfortunately, the Mordechai and five of his children were massacred in, I think it was 1298, in the Rindfleisch massacres. So he never lived to see the publication of his work, of his glosses, which unfortunately, in the times of the Bali Hatosas, if you were in the Rhine Valley, you know, you might be killed, either in a pogrom or in a crusade. You know, take your pick. Unfortunately, lo aleinu. So the Mordechai, he has a little psak in the back of the Gemara where oftentimes he will quote from his teachers and other Ashkenaz rabbis and Bali Hatosas from the 12th century, from the 13th century. So the Mordechai here quotes from Rav Klonimos Barab Ovadia. Klonimos, by the way, You know he's living in Ashkenaz because Kolonimus was one of the most famous Ashkenaz families. Where are they famous from? Piyutim. Ah, our favorite topic that we got rid of during COVID. All the Piyutim on Yontif and on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Most of those Piyutim, if you look in the top, it says written by Kolonimus ben somebody. Kolonimus was an Italian family that went back to the 6th century or the 7th century. Many of them migrated to northern France and to the Rhine Valley, and they were big Tamini Chachamim and also Paitanim. It was a family of Paitanim. The Gabbaim loved it's good. Now you know. This all comes from the Kolonimus family. Zillions of Ashkenaz Piyutim, they come from this family. So usually when you see the Kolonimus family, you know you can pin it in Ashkenaz. So this Rav Kolonimus Rabbi Ovadia, I don't know who it was, but he was somebody in the Kolonimus family, probably. Mishum Reb Yom Tov. Heter B'Yom Tov Lo Se Sakin O Klio Dover Hanital Al Ner Shel Shaiva. He allowed them to put a knife or something else on this wax candle. Shelo B'Malkam Hadlakasa, not where it is burning, because then when it hits the knife, guess what's going to happen? The knife is going to drop and it's going to cut the candle and stop the thing from burning. That sounds like grama, causation. She'inu El Gram Kibui. Avo Rabbeinu Yoel Pirish. Rabbeinu Yoel. This is likely the father of the Rav Yah, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yoel HaLevi. This is, if you're into medieval Ashkenaz Rishonim, I don't know if we do that, get to that in kindergarten. No, not so much. But for those who are interested, for the top students you give them the Optivitzer introduction to the Sefer HaRavya, the Mobile of Sefer HaRavya, which is a very important academic work on the Chachmei Ashkenaz. So these are the people in your neighborhood. These are the people who are being talked about. These are the big Chachmei Ashkenaz in the time of the Rishonim who are establishing precedent for Ashkenazi Jews today. The Ramah is going to quote oftentimes, so the Ramah is living in Krakow in the 1700s, 17th century, late 1600s. He's establishing precedent for Ashkenaz, and he's quoting from the Trumas Hadesh and the Maharil, 300 years before him, who are quoting from, 200 years, they're quoting from the Ashkenazi Rabbanim, who are quoted in this Mordechai. If you were to chart the Ashkenaz history of Pesach, this is very, very important for us. For Ashkenazim. For the Sephardim, they have their own chevra. But for us, this is like where we go. So he says, Rabbeinu Yoel says, Afilu b'yomtiv lo sharinu gram kibui. We do not allow the causation of extinguishing on yomtiv. Lechat chila. This is the key line. Lechat chila. What does lechat chila mean? A priori. Most preferred. MP, Rabbi Yudin Shalita, my rabbi from Fairlawn, he always used to say, MP, most preferred. MP, this is the most preferred method. Lechatchila, you shouldn't do it. Ela b'makom hezek dafka. Only because it could potentially cause damage, danger. It could burn something down. So now, the Gemara, which was very expansive, that said, the malacha on Shabbos is only asiya, not grama. The Mordechai just took the whole heter and shrunk it down only to b'makom hezek, only into a case of damage. Or we could translate, only a case of serious need. So that's what the Ramah adds. If you look in source number 3, this din in Shulchan Aruch is in Simen Shin Lamed Daled. Teva, you have a box, she'achaz bo ha'ur, that the word Aleph Vav Reish can be spelled two ways. With a dot on the top is or, which means light. A dot in the middle of the vav is ur, that means fire. So teva she'achaz bo ha'ur. If you have a dresser, let's say you have this bench. You have the bench, and this part of the bench is lit on fire. So halacha l'maisa b'zman hazeh, if you have a fire in the house, you know what you should do? Extinguish it. Because we're worried about pikuach nefesh, and there are gas lines in the house, and potentially, rachmon l'tzlan, people could get seriously injured or even pikuach nefesh. So already the last few hundred years, the rule of thumb is, if you have a fire in the house, you put it out. It's suffik pikuach nefesh. But in times of the Gemara, they had one room mud structures. It wasn't a big deal. So you had a bench that looked like this. This side is on fire. You didn't need to this, how much, they didn't have any furniture in the house anyway. So you had one piece of furniture. This part is on fire. So you would take a rug that was, non-flammable, like a piece of leather, you throw it on top of the other side. When the fire goes till here, it's going to stop and it's going to go out. Beseder. Yechol lifros or shel gedi, the hide of a gedi, which I would not recommend today. I don't think the fire marshal thinks that you should put out the fire with a goat hide. But if you have one, the Shulchan Aruch says it is good for extinguishing fires. Mitzidah ha'acher, on the other side of the thing that's on fire, shelo tisart, that shouldn't be burnt. Or you could set up your special Maginot line of vessels full of water, so the fire is coming down, so you set up the fire defense line, and you put all the buckets of water and the barrels, the fire is going to come, break the barrels, psh, the water is going to go down, and ois, fire. Very good. Says Shulchan Aruch, great. Afilu klei cheres chadashim. This is a big machlokas that we've shown about this. Shulchan Aruch says, even if it's new vessels, shavada yisbaku, that's definitely going to break. Because causing extinguishing is mutter. Gram kibui mutter. Says the Rama. You see where it says hagah? Hagah, that means Rav Moshe Isserles taps you on the shoulder. Not so fast. Two words. It's changed the whole story. Bamakom pseida. In a case of loss. Bamakom pseida. When you're going to lose. You have a loss. So of course, in the case of a fire, it's one thing. But now you're going to figure out, okay, what about, I don't know, I have a cow. Now this cow, it's looking to express its milk. And is that okay to set up a grumma situation for milking the cow on Shabbos? So it depends. Is the cow, according to Svardim, set up your grumma from today till tomorrow, no problem. But then for Ashkenazim, you have to figure out, is this a case of hefsid? So this is one of the big issues that they deal with in Israel. you have a farm, you have a kibbutz somewhere, and they want to be Shomer Shabbos Kilchasa. And the problem is, if the animals, I don't know what, I'm not a farmer, but apparently if the animals don't give milk every day, then it's a big hefsid. Forget about even if the milk gets lost, if you're going to throw away the Shabbos milk, but apparently they have to have like a Seder. If they don't have their Dafyomi milk situation, like you have to have exactly the amount every day, it's a big problem. So according to the Sfardim, so you set up a grumma mechanism, which we have to figure out what that is. But if you set up a grumma mechanism, so all the cows, so good. But for what about the Ashkenazim? So you'll say, well, if you have a cow, one cow, maybe it's not such a hefsid. Maybe it is, I don't know. You have to check with the farmer. But if you have 100 cows or 1,000 cows, so it could be it's a huge hefsid. Then what you do with the milk is a separate question. But this idea of now you have to check the box, you have to reach the threshold of hefsid, is important. You know, maybe I'm moderately uncomfortable in the house because the air conditioning is not exactly at the temperature that I want it to be. So can I set up a grumma that's going to kick on the temperature so that the house will cool down a little bit? Again, once you determine what the grumma is, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. Well, it depends. If you think that that's a makom pseida, if it's really, it's so burdensome, it's so onerous, it's so difficult. So maybe, but if it's just, you know, and I have to wear thicker socks instead of thinner socks, then the grumma, you shouldn't be pursuing that. So this is the first thing, right? So for Sephardim, you have a lot more leeway, but for Ashkenazim, not so much leeway. Okay, that's in terms of what's the law. Well, how do you define what is called grumma? Because if you take a look, this Gemara in the bottom of the source, in Shabbos Dalam and Aleph, this helps articulate something that you probably could have said on your own. We've been using the definition of causation as the English word to explain grumma. Well, clearly, not every malacha on Shabbos, and there's a tshuva from Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank from the Har Tzvi that develops this idea fully, not every malacha on Shabbos is going to be subject to the leniency of saying, oh, it's just causation. I'll give you an example. The Gemara says in Shabbos, Amar Abibi Bar Abaye, Hidbik Pas Betanur, Hitiru Lo Lerdosa Kodem Shiyov Lidei Yisr Skila. Lahadbik Pas, it's that guy in the back of the shuk who has the dough and he slaps it on the inside of the giant metal oven and it's the dough, it's baked by the heat of the oven and it's on the wall. That's called Lahadbik. Devik, like stick. So you take the pita or the lafa, whatever it is, you stick it on the wall, and it stays there for 10 seconds, it's getting heated up, and then it cooks, and then you take a little spatula, and you scrape it off the wall, and you pop it out. That's called ridia sapas, taking the bread off the wall. So the Gemara says, let's say you had the following case. a person, Nebuch, they weren't educated about Shabbos. So they're in their kitchen, they have their tandoor, whatever it's called, and they slap the bread on there, and then 10 seconds later, the Mashgiach runs in. He says, Yaakov, it's an Isser Karis, don't do it! Don't do it! And Yaakov says, I did it already, I put it in the thing. So what does the Mashgiach tell him? Take it out! Hey, take it out! So Yaakov's like, am I allowed to take it out? The Mashgiach goes, Taka, it's an Isser Drabanan to take it out. Radia Sapas is Isser Drabanan. So Mashgiach says, take it out anyway. Ah, it's an Isser Drabanan. Because if you let it sit there and cook, what have you done? You've done an Isser Skila. You've done an actual Shabbos violation, Malachim and Daraisa. So you take it out. Great. What do I learn from this? What is the Malach of Bishul by definition? I take my bread and I slap it inside the oven. At that moment, am I chaya for Bishul? Well, it's not yet cooked, so I'm not chaya for Bishul yet. Because what creates the chiyav of Bishul, the chiyav of cooking? The heat that transforms the food from raw into cooked. Isn't that a classic case of grammar, of causation? I'm utilizing the heat. The heat is causing the item to become transformed. All I did was put the food in the oven. And then the oven cooks the food. So obviously you see that for the malacha of Bishul, grama causation does not help you. That is the definition of Bishul. It is putting food in a place where the heat is going to transform it. Similarly, and an expansion of this idea, turn the page, is the Gemara Bava Kamma. Gemara Bava Kamma has a fascinating application of the principle of Meleches Machsheves that we've talked about. Usually, we talked about how Meleches Machsheves regulates the din, and it's usually a leniency. You say, oh, that, it's not an Issa Daraisa because it doesn't rise to the threshold of Meleches Machsheves. This Gemara is one of the examples, few, but there are a few, where Meleches Machsheves is a Chumrah. Meleches Machsheves says, oh, what you did, that's a Malacha. So what's the case? You are, you know, Jimmy the farmer, you go out, you have a big pile of grain. So what do? First you take an animal and you stamp all over it and you break off the chaff from the stalk from the kernel, which is inside the chaff. Then the animal smashes, so you have a big mixture of chaff and kernels. So here's what you're going to do. You're going to take a pitchfork, you're going to take a huge, or like a big shovel, you're going to take a huge pile of stuff and you're going to fling it into the air. And what's going to happen? The wheat, the kernels, which are heavy, are going to settle down and the wind is going to carry away the chaff, which is lighter. So what's that called? That's called winnowing. That's the malach of Zoreh on Shabbos. So, the Gemara says in Bava Kamma, that's interesting. Who did the malacha? Did I do the malacha of winnowing? Well, I threw it up in the air, but what caused the separation of the light chaff from the heavy kernels? The wind. So the Gemara says the Gemara, Zorah ki amrinan zorah v'ruach misayaso, hani mili le'inyan Shabbos, why the malachas machsheves asra Torah? The Torah says you can't do malachas machsheves, intentional work. Well, you intended, the whole point was to use the wind to separate the chaff from the kernels. So that is the Malacha Doraisa. So that's not grama. That is the Malacha. So when it comes to cooking, that you can't say that's grama. And when it comes to winnowing, the Gemara says you can't say that's grama. On the other hand, what is grama? So we said it before in the Shulchan Aruch, and the source of that is the Mishnah here in Shabbos and Kuf Chaf Amin Aleph. The Mishnah says where you have that hide of the goat, where you're going to put the hide of the goat on this side of the item so that when the fire gets there, the fire is going to be extinguished. What did I do? Or the same case of the Gemara, what did I do? I took a bunch of barrels, filled them with water, and these barrels are earthenware barrels, so when they're exposed to heat, what's going to happen to them? That's it. They're going to shatter. And then when they shatter, they're going to empty out all the contents, which is water, and it's going to cause the flame to ignite. So, to extinguish. So, what extinguished the fire? So I was the one who put the barrels there, but the water extinguished the fire. I just caused it. I set up the situation so that eventually, somehow, that would be. So somewhere between these cases, between the Malacha of Bishol and Zoreh on one side, and this case of extinguishing on the other side, this is where we're going to try to figure out what is Grama. Well, let's look at this case. This, because this is going to be our best case. This is the Beferish and Mishnah. The Gemara talks about Gram Kibui. So I did something over here. I didn't touch the fire. I didn't touch the fire at all. I did something not in the fire. I walked away. The malacha happened later on by itself. I didn't do it biyadayim. That's going to be your classic case. So somehow, if I could do that for other malachos, at least in the case of Hefsid, according to the Rambam, when there's a loss, that should be okay. Right? That should be okay. If I could set up something where I arrange something over here, on this side of the room, and the malacha doesn't take place right away, it happens eventually through the force of the water, which is broken by the heat of the fire, that's a classic case. Oh, you're already getting to the Sholta Giborim. You saw the Sholta Giborim before? No. Okay. We'll get to that in 1 second. Before the Sholta Giborim, we got to see this Ramban. The Ramban, the Heliger of Moshe ben Nachman in the 13th century, the Ramban in the bottom, in source number 7, the Ramban says, not so fast. The Ramban is going to give us the first limitation. The Ramban says, Nachmanides says, yeah, this whole case, Yosar Nachal Lofarish, last two lines of this piece in the Ramban, Tahasam Vahad Mechaba Vahacha, Kemechitzas Kelam Dami, Te'efsha Delo Mechaba. He says, in this case, when you set up your barrels with your water, is it possible that the fire is going to do like a quick end around because there's going to be a gust of wind and it's not going to be extinguished? Possible. Ramban says, that's why we're lenient. That's the only reason we're lenient, because we're not certain that the fire is going to be extinguished. Well, if you follow this Ramban, then your whole heter for grama is going to be out the window, because the only case that we're going to allow it is when you're not sure you're going to get to the desired result. That's Aleph. Beis, the second limitation, if we want to go with it, on the page is the Sholta Giborim, the comments in the back on the commentary on the Rif, where the Sholta Giborim says, oh, I'm going to tell you something. Sholta Giborim, based on a deal from the tour, he says, this whole thing is delo mechaven. You're not intending to extinguish the fire. De'i mechaven lakach afilo al yedei gram aser. Boom. Sells the Sholta Giborim. When you are setting up this situation, you're not intending to extinguish it. It's a little bit of a different, difficult read in the Gemara, but that's the way the Sholta Giborim sets it up. So let's say you're in a, you know, this comes up sometimes in a medical situation, you want to set up a grama, the grama telephone, the grama, I don't know, the grama surgery center, the grama, whatever it is. The whole point is to do that malacha, al yedei grama. Sholta Giborim says, no good. No heter of grama. The whole heter of grama is if you're not intending to do the malacha. So these are two big chumras. So if you are following the Ramban or the Sholta Giborim, it's very limited. So
you could say you weren't intending to put the fire out. You were just intending that this one caught on fire.
Yeah, that's true.
Not
correct. So that's correct. That's how the that's how the Sholta Giborim is going to have to kind of like explain that Gemara. Exactly. Because otherwise, it doesn't make sense. So this is the first thing, which already now, according to these we've shown him, it's not going to be such a great heter. You can't apply this all the time, depending on the circumstance. But the main, I would say the main source, the main issue, the main test case for figuring out what constitutes grama or not is going to be this Gemara Bava Kamma, source number 9. Itmar, we learned. There is a din. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Rabbi Yochanan says, Isho, your fire, Mishum Chitzav. It's like your arrow. Rish Lakish Omar, Isho, your fire, it's like your mamon. What is going on over here? There are four main categories of damage. Tort, right? That's what's called torts. If my ox eats your ox, It's a tort law, right? So four kinds of damages. It's the first mission in Bava Kamma. So one of those damages is called Eish, fire. And the Gemara has special nafkamina if you are damaging through fire. Now, when we say fire, we do not mean arson. Right? Arson, that's Adam Amazik. If I take a blowtorch and I light your pants on fire directly, you're not in them. Imagine you're not in the pants, because that would be a different problem. If I light your pants on fire with my blowtorch, that's Adam Amazik. That's direct. It's like the equivalent of my punching you in the nose, or whatever, tearing your pants. But the case of Eish is the following, and this is a Gemara in Bava Kamma about how the wind is going, but I light a fire in my backyard. I light a fire in my backyard, and I'm having a kumsitz, whatever, or I'm out in the county preserve, and I have a permit to make a backyard bonfire. And then I go to my trunk to pick something out, and no one else is there. And what happens, unfortunately? All of a sudden, one little twig that was on fire, one spark, falls out of the bonfire and lights the prairie on fire, and then it goes down and it burns up the neighbor's 3 acres of farmland. So did I go and light the guy's fire? Did I actually put the fire on his yard? No, I lit the fire in my own yard. It's just that I was irresponsible and I didn't take proper precautions to make sure that I was far enough that, you know, I wouldn't cause, and that's the key word here, I wouldn't cause the damage, so I'm responsible for the damage that happened. The question the Gemara is asking is, well, wait a second, what's the nature of that chiyuv? Because I didn't light my neighbor's wheat on fire, is it the fire considered to be as if, let's say, my animal went next door and ate it all up? Or is it more of an extension of me? Which has Bava Kamma nafka mina, not for today. Has applications, different, that's for Bava Kamma. So if you understand that Isho, my fire, is Mishum Chitzav, it's like my arrow, so then, halachically, in some ways, the fact that I was irresponsible and it went and it burned the next door neighbor down, it's the equivalent of if I went there, the same way that there's no difference if I bang you in the nose with my fist, or if I bang you in the nose with my arrow.
There's one big difference. One is intentionality and one is not.
No, both I'm intending to. I'm intending to punch you in the nose.
But you're not intending to burn down your neighbor.
True. So for Nezikin, so this is important. For Nezikin, intention never matters. Adam Mu'ad Li'olam. You are responsible for property damage that is your... the consequence of your property, irrespective of your intention. Adam mu'ad la'olam, except for if you took the appropriate precautions. If you took the appropriate precautions, then you're not going to be chayav. But otherwise, you know, you could be sleeping and you could be chayav for nezek, because you went to sleep next to the guy's china vase, and then in the middle of the night, ois vase, you're responsible for that, because you went to sleep when the vase was there. If you went to sleep and they put the vase there, it's a different story. So the key here is that Rabbi Yochanan is telling me that what happened to my fire is like the extension of me. How did the fire get from here to there? What brought it from here to there? The wind. So, can we extrapolate from the laws of Nezikin to the laws of Shabbos and say the same way that the koach acher me'uravbo, this is a Nezikin term, the koach acher, the other force, which is now part of the situation. So I have a fire. This is the backyard barbecue in the county preserve. That's my fire. Comes the koach acher, the other force, which is the wind, which I should have expected. There's a little bit of wind. That comes the koach acher me'uravbo and extends the damage. According to Rabbi Yochanan, I am responsible personally for that damage. It's like Isha Mishum Chitzav. So maybe you're going to expand that to Shabbos and say that if I put something down and then a Koach Acha Me'urvbo comes in and moves that further, then I should be responsible from a Shabbos perspective. So this seems to be a Machlokas Rishonim. The Ran, in the Chidushia Ran in Sanhedrin, in Ein Zion, on the bottom of your page in page 10, he says, you cannot compare Shabbos to bava kama, to damages. Even though ishum ishum chitzav nafkamita for dal dvarim for lo mechayev misa, but it's not comparable to Shabbos. Don't compare it. Shabbos is not the same. But if you look on the top next, in page four, in source 11, the Nemuki Yosef in the back of the riff, and we don't have time to go through the whole thing today because we spoke it out one more time in the past, the Nemuki Yosef has the question, how can, according to Rabbi Yochanan, you light Shabbos candles on Friday afternoon? Think carefully. If you hold Isha Mishim Chitzo, as long as the fire continues to burn and burn and burn because of the fuel, it's like you're lighting it. Well, shouldn't that be? It's as if you're lighting it on Shabbos.
Maybe it's going to go out, too.
Maybe.
So you put it out.
But it doesn't help, because Lamaisa didn't go out. So if I lit it on Friday, the Nemuki Yosef asked 800 years ago, how could you light Shabbos candles? If it continuously burns on Shabbos, and if you told me, Isha Mishum Chitzov, my light is my arrow, so it's like you're lighting a fire on Shabbos. So what's the premise of the Nemuki Yosef's question? The premise of the question is that the rule in damages is applicable to the rule on Shabbos. Right? According to the Ran, you don't ask this question. Because what's true in the laws of damages is not relevant to the rules of Shabbos. According to the Ran, the fact that in damages, my fire is an extension of me, even though it blew out of my control, that's not relevant to Shabbos. But according to the Nemuki Yosef, it is. According to the Nemuki Yosef, the fact that the fire grew and grew, that's not grumma, that's me. Whereas according to the Ran, that's grumma on Shabbos. It's not grumma on Bava Kama, but it's grumma on Shabbos, and he'll give you an explanation to explain why. You see how this machlokas between the Ran and the Nebuchadnezzar Yosef about whether or not you can compare one area of halacha damages to Shabbos is going to determine whether on Shabbos something is going to be called grumma or not. Because what's grumma for Shabbos might not be grumma for other areas of halacha. What's not grumma in Nezikin might still be grumma for Shabbos. And this is also two deyas, seems to be, at least the way that the Maharam Shik explains it, this is two deyas in Tosfos in Sanhedrin. So now, let's bring it back to something a little bit more accessible. Okay, so according to these two opinions, you're going to have to figure out what to do on how to compare Isha Mishum Chitzo to Shabbos. How do we explain grumma on Shabbos? What is the reason at the end of the day that the case of the Mishnah of grumma was permitted? Let's assume that grumma is permitted at least if you follow the second opinion in Tosfos, like the more lenient opinion of the Ran, that Shabbos is different. You're going to have this more expansive definition. What is going to be the definition? So there are two approaches, and this is the key. The Maharam Shik has two tshuvas. The Maharam Shik was a student, the chief disciple of the Chasam Sofer in the 1800s. And he's living in Europe. He's writing tshuvas. He has two tshuvas on this, at least two. I saw two, Kuf Yudal and I think Kuf Nun Zion. The Maharam Shik says, I heard about this new thing, some kind of clock that was used for setting up different machinery. Can you use it on Shabbos to set up a certain thing? So the Maharam Shik, it's not 100% clear how to understand this Maharam Shik. There's a big discussion, but Rabbi Baruch Simon, one of the Rosh Yeshiva in YU, has an essay on this. Others, it seems that this is the key of the Maharam Shik, which is the majority opinion of the Achronim. The Maharam Shik's opinion is that for Shabbos purposes, the reason why the case of the barrels is grumma is because when I put the barrels down, when I did my Maisa, nothing happened. It was later that the fire came along and was extinguished by the force of the heat, which cracked the barrels and brought the water. So there was a time delay. As opposed to when I, let's say, if I walk into a room and I flick a switch, there's a lot of discussion about switches, grumma switches, that's not for today. But if I flick a switch and immediately the lights go on, the Maharam Shik says, oh, that's immediate. That's not grumma. But grumma is a delay. Rav Soloveitchik has a slightly different understanding of grumma. That's quoted, if you want to look through it inside, of Shechter Shalita, he quotes it in source number 13 in his Sefer Be'ikvei Atzon in Siman Zion. Rav Soloveitchik says it does not depend on the amount of time. That's not the issue. It's not about the amount of time. It's about when the other force, the Koach Acher, is introduced. Is the other force being introduced before I do my action or after I do my action? Rav Soloveitchik says, when I drop a boulder at the top of a mountain and it continues to roll down, 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 down and hit the bottom, is that my action? Yeah, that's my action. Why? Because I'm harnessing the koach acher, the other force, when I do the action right away. What's that force?
Gravity.
Exactly. Rav Soloveitchik says, when I throw the chaff with the kernels up in the air, I'm harnessing the action of the wind, which is in the air. But if the action did not start yet, if that force is not in the environment yet, then that is called grama. Two different approaches. According to the Maram Shik and many Achronim, grama is that the outside force is acting later than my action. So lo sasa kamalacha, I didn't do, the force did it later. The key nafgamina between these two understandings of grama, right, what is so special about that case with the barrels and the water, is that according to the Maram Shik, at least Me'ikar Adin, and he says other poskim agreed with him, if you set up a timer, and I move the pin of the timer. Remember, you have to move the pins, assuming there's no mukta issue. I move the pin for the malacha to start earlier. So let's say the light was going to kick on at 6 o'clock in the afternoon. Now I'm going to move the pin. I'm going to kick the light on at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. The Maram Shik would say, well, when I moved the pin, did anything happen? No. Later, 3 o'clock, it's going to happen. But then it's going to happen because the spring is going to hit the pin, which is going to cause the circuit and the whole chad gadya. Rav Soloveitchik disagrees. Rav Soloveitchik says, well, look at the mechanism in the box. There's a ticking and a winding, and there's a force which is already at play. So Rav Soloveitchik says that you are harnessing the koach acher, me'urovbo, that already exists built into the dial. So Rav Soloveitchik says that's not called grama. What's that?
How does it work with the barrels of water?
The
fire is already going. Right.
Exactly. The fire is already going, but my putting down the water, so then that koach acher me'urovbo, the capacity for the water to extinguish the fire, that's going to start later. So there are two more cases, which we're not going to get into today, but you need to know these cases because both the Maram Shik's approach and Rav Soloveitchik's approach are going to have to deal with this. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, in two different cases, very interesting cases. The first one is in 14, Ayin Zayin Amud Aleph, Kafsa Umeis Barav. You took someone, you tied them down, and they died of hunger. So are you chaya for murdering them? You tied them down. The Gemara says, Pater. Why? Because it's true, you caused them to die because you tied them down, but what did they die of? They died of starvation. It's an indirect, it's grama. But the Gemara then discusses, Amar Rava kaf so b'chama umeis, or b'tzina umeis chayav, sof chama lovo, sof sina lovo is pater. You tie down somebody in the sun, in the Sahara, and they died of sunstroke. Kafso bechama umeis chayav, but sof chama lavo, you tie them down at night, and it was not hot, and then the sun came up, and then it roasted them. You're putter. Rav Soloveitchik says, I'll tell you exactly why. Because when I tied them down, the koach acher me'urovbo, the outside force that was going to cause the death, didn't exist yet. It didn't. It's only on the other side of the world. Halachically, in this reality, it's not there. So the Maram Shik will say, no, that's not why. It's because there's a delay before it's going to kick in. So then they're going to have to deal with one last Gemara. This is a very interesting Gemara. Itmar, Omar Rav Papa, Haiman de Kafte Lachavri Vashkel Ale Bitka de Maya, Giri Dideu Machayev, Hanimili Bekoach Rishon, Avu Bekoach Shini Grama Ba'alma. You take somebody and you take them next to the Hoover Dam and you tie them down. And what do? You pick up, I'm not saying you should do this. I'm saying someone did this back in the cartoons. No one was harmed in this case. It's just theoretically. You put them next to the Hoover Dam and you pick up the dam. So what's going to happen? The guy's going to drown. So the Gemara says, if the guy drowns immediately, that's Koach Rishon. But if you tied him down farther down the Colorado River, or whatever river that is where the Hoover Dam is, and then you tied the guy down, and then guess what happened? 2 hours later, the water comes down, and it kills the guy. The Gemara says, no, that's Grama. It's Grama. Because it's called Koach Sheni. It wasn't that I picked it up. Now, there's a little bit of a kinach here because this is called Hasaras Hamonea. I'm utilizing the removing the impediment that was the dam, which is also interesting if you think about electricity, because when you move the switch, you're just removing the impediment that was closing the circuit. So there's a Hasaras Hamonea issue here. So for the Maram Shik, this is great. The Maram Shik will say, wait a second, if I lift the dam and the guy gets killed in the water immediately, the first gush, so then that's, of course, that's going to be my Maisa Adam. But if he gets killed an hour later, that's called Grama. For Rav Soloveitchik, it doesn't make sense. It's all the same force of the water. So Rav Shechter has to say that Ritzicha is different. Rav Shechter explains to Rav Soloveitchik that Ritzicha doesn't need Maisa Adam. It also needs Koach Gavra. There's an aftamina of this from washing Netilas Yadayim. Let's say, I don't know, you're in the airport and you don't have a cup and you can't wait online for 2 hours at Starbucks for them to give you the free cup, which they're very generally, if you ask them nicely, they'll usually give you the cup. So how are you going to wash? Of course, you pack multiple sandwiches because you don't fly without food, obviously. So you have multiple sandwiches, you're in the airport, your flight is delayed and you're very hungry. So how are you going to wash? So this exact story with the Koach Rishon, Rav Shechter explains that Netilas Yadayim is the same Koach Rishon as Ritzicha. So when you push the faucet thing, you know what I'm talking about? You push it and the first gush comes out? Because now they did away with the handles. Because otherwise, you're going to be like letting the water run for O'Hare. They're going to have no more water. So you just push it down. The first gush, that's Koach Gavra. So you push this one down, you wash one hand. Then you move it to the next one, you push it down. The guy's watching you. It's like a little bit strange. Then you move it to the next one, you get the next hand because you do two on each hand and you're out of there. Because that pushing, that's not Grama. But if you push it and then the water's running and running and then you stick your hand under, that's Grama. That's not called Koach Gavra for Netilas Yadayim purposes. So it's also going to be related to this question of the electricity of Hasaras Hamonea. The movement sensor, exactly. So just to summarize, to see how complicated this is, we pointed out initially that there was a machlokas between the Magen Avraham and the Evin Ozer about the Rechayim Shomayim. Then we pointed out that even though there was a pretty clear Gemara, the Mishnah, the Gram Kibui, we had the limiting factors of the Ramban and the Shulta Giborim. Then we said, well, what about learning it from Isho Mishum Chitzav? So we saw that was the machlokas, 2 days in Rishonim, 2 days in Tosfos. And the question, can you follow the lenient opinion? But even if you follow the lenient opinion, let's say we're going to follow the lenient opinion. Let's say we're going to follow the Tosfos. But nonetheless, we still have to give a definition. So according to the Achronim, we say that the definition of that lenient opinion, not learning from Isha Mishum Chitzav, and we're going to say, oh, Shabbos, the Grama, it's more expansive. That's because there's a time lag. That's one approach. But according to Rav Soloveitchik and other Achronim, it's not about a time lag. It's whether or not the Koach HaChem Urvbo is there already. So Rav Soloveitchik would say, if you have a Rube Goldberg machine and you set it up, then Rav Soloveitchik said, that's not Grama. So that's why some of these different Grama institutions and inventions, you have to figure out whether or not it's relying on the Koach HaChem Urvbo or not. And then there's a question of randomness versus inevitability. And now you see that this application is going to be, you know, all across, like we started from the beginning, Netilas Yadayim and Shechita and other Nafkamina, to figure out what's called Grama and what's called Maisa Adam and what's called Koach Gavra.